Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay on Wednesday, January the 29th. Thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. And our top story today is that the Chancellor's made a significant announcement on the future of a project to build another tunnel linking Kent and Essex.
We have already provided funding to unlock investments in sectors like aerospace, automotives and life sciences. And we have set out reforms to boost financial services, the AI sector, and our brilliant creative industries. We are not wasting any time, and we will move forward with the next steps of the industrial strategy ahead of its publication in the spring. We will work with the private sector to deliver the infrastructure that our country desperately needs. This includes the Lower Thames Crossing, which will improve connectivity at Dover, Felixstowe and Harwich, alleviating severe congestion as goods destined to export come from the North and the Midlands and across the country to markets overseas. To drive growth and to deliver value for money for taxpayers, we are exploring options to privately finance this important project.
That's Rachel Reeves, who's been making a big speech today on how to boost economic growth in the UK. As you heard there, the government's going to look at privately financing the £9 billion scheme. Just a reminder on this one, the road would connect the A2 and M2 in Kent to the A13 in Thurrock and Junction 29 of the M25. It would be just over 14 miles long, with 2.6 miles of that in two tunnels under the Thames, and that would actually make them the longest road tunnels in the UK. Now, the idea of another crossing was first suggested in the late 2000s as a way of easing congestion at the current Dartford Tunnels and QE2 Bridge. Well, let's get some initial reaction today from Natalie Chapman. She's Head of Public Affairs at Tunbridge Wells-based Logistics UK.
Well, Logistics UK, we're delighted to hear the positive sentiment that the Chancellor has made about this really crucial scheme, which is not only important for us down here in the southeast, but actually will deliver growth nationally. 70% of traffic from the Port of Dover uses the current Dartford crossing, and it's a critical route for UK exports.
Anyone who's ever used the Dartford crossing, be that the tunnel or the bridge, will know just how incredibly busy it is, and an awful lot of lorries travel on it every single day. How much of a difference would the Lower Thames crossing make, do you think?
Well, the Lower Thames crossing will not only provide crucial additional capacity. The current Dartford crossing is operating on a daily basis over its design capacity, but it will also add much needed resilience into the transport network as well. We know that when things go wrong at Dartford, as they regularly do, there's very few alternatives, particularly for freight traffic. What it means is that lorries have to divert around the M25 via Heathrow, adding up to 2 hours to journey times.
Now, the Lower Thames crossing seems to have been rumbling on for, well, forever, but it has faced a lot of criticism, particularly from environmental campaigners. At Logistics UK, do you kind of appreciate where they're coming from and why they're so concerned about it?
Yeah, there's a lot of work that has been done with the Lower Thames crossing. So the scheme as it now is has moved a long way forward from some of the original proposals to try and mitigate some of those environmental concerns. If we look at air quality, for example, there's huge air quality problems at Dartford itself because of the congestion caused by the crossing. So a new crossing that will allow more free flow traffic will hopefully help improve local air quality.
Rachel Reeves did actually mention in her speech that she finds it incredibly frustrating how long these big projects take. Do you find it equally frustrating? You must have spoken about the Lower Thames crossing for years.
On a personal level, I have been talking about the Lower Thames crossing for about the last 15 years. It is time to get spades in the ground. It is a shovel-ready project. We just need to get the development consent order signed off. It's also a project that, because it will carry a road user charge, is really open to private finance options. So this isn't a scheme where the government needs to solely find the money. There are really good options for private finance as well. We just need to get going. And today's speech by the Chancellor, I think, has put some confidence into private investment.
We'll have further reaction to this story in tomorrow's episode when we hear from the Kent Wildlife Trust.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and a Deal man who was jailed for murdering his wife more than 25 years ago faces more criminal charges. Debbie Griggs disappeared from her home in May 1999. Her remains were found years later, buried in a garden in Dorset. Andrew Griggs, who's 62, was sentenced to life in October 2019. He's now accused of perverting the course of justice. A teenager's been arrested by police investigating an alleged sex attack in Ashford. It's reported to have happened on a pathway near the river close to Beaver Road last Friday night. A 17-year-old boy from Romney Marsh is being questioned. A Sittingbourne man who sexually abused vulnerable children has been jailed for more than 20 years. A court heard the 39-year-old's offending started in 2008. He was finally arrested in 2020 when one of his victims came forward. He'll have to spend 8 years on licence when he's finally released. The family of a woman found dead after going missing from Folkestone believe police may have missed opportunities to find her while she was still alive. This is one of our most read stories on the website today. Leah Daly was discovered at the Warren last May, 12 days after she'd last been seen. At a pre-inquest review, it's been revealed the force lost drone footage from the time her body was discovered. The family argue that footage would have shown how visible she was from the sky. Another hearing is due later this year. Six members of a criminal drugs gang have been locked up after a stop and search in Tunbridge led to their supply chain being dismantled. The men ran a cocaine network that spread to the southwest of England and traded into areas including Tunbridge Wells. Searches were captured on police body-worn cameras.
Police officers for the search warrant!
It's thought the group were making around £7,000 a week. They've been jailed for a total of 20 years. You can see footage of those searches and pictures of those who've been locked up by heading to the story at Kent Online.
Kent Online reports.
An investigation has found a breakdown in communication led to a railway worker being hospitalised following a serious collision near Stroud. The crash happened on the HS1 line when two maintenance vehicles were knocked into an operator in November 2023. Network Rail High Speed say they've already taken action to ensure the safety of their workers. A carer from Gravesend who seriously injured a motorbike rider when she pulled out in front of him will be sentenced later this year. Lovepreet Kaur admitted careless or inconsiderate driving after the collision on Rooton Road, which left the victim with a broken hip. The 28-year-old from Glebe Road has been ordered by the court not to drive any vehicle until her sentencing in March. Kent Police have released a new picture of a man who's been missing from Gillingham for more than a week. Ivan Izalniks, who speaks very little English, was last seen in the Marlborough Road area on January the 15th. We've shared that picture of the 67-year-old via our socials. You can also see it by heading to the website. Now, a decision to close a leisure centre in Deal for 9 months is going to be reviewed after a backlash from people who use it. We told you earlier this month how Tides is due to shut in April until a new operator's found to run it from next January. But those using the pool, tennis courts and sports hall weren't happy. Well, Councillor Chris Vinson is deputy leader of the opposition at Dover District Council. He's also part of the Overview and Scrutiny Committee and has been speaking to Finn from our colleagues at KMTV.
The council operates in the way where the cabinet makes decisions and then councillors can, if they feel that the decisions need to be reviewed because not all of the information was available at the time, then they can use a process called call-in. That is what we've done here. And the way that that works is that the council's Overview and Scrutiny Committee then reviews all of the decision that was made and then makes recommendations back to Cabinet. So the key thing that happened last night is that the Scrutiny Committee heard from many users and groups at Tides, heard the impact that a closure will have on them, and then the committee resolved unanimously to ask the Cabinet to take another look at the decision to consider all the potential options that there are for keeping the centre open. And next Monday, on the 3rd of February, the Cabinet will review that decision and have the opportunity to do right by the users of the centre and keep it open during 2025 until the new operator starts in 2026.
What was your reaction during that time when the press and the public were excluded and you voted on this? What was kind of your reaction? Did you expect it to be unanimous?
I think there were many, many people here who were affected by the decision for whom getting involved in the way that the district council operates is completely new to them. And so I fought really hard to try and make sure that as much as possible, the discussion and the decision about this well in public. Now, ultimately, that wasn't possible. And the committee voted that the more sensitive bits of the paper that went to Cabinet earlier this month should be still reviewed in private. Now, I know that there will be many people who don't necessarily understand why that was the case. But let me just say that the important thing here is that the committee decided to ask the Cabinet to look again. So ignoring all of the process stuff, the outcome that we want, the outcome that I've been contacted by many residents about, is to have the centre kept open. And that's what I'm hoping we can achieve. What was really clear during the public part of the meeting is that once the new operator is appointed, the sports hall and the tennis centre will be kept open throughout the construction of the new leisure centre, which will build us a new gym and a new swimming pool. So there is no practical barrier to keeping the centre open this year. It's purely a financial and commercial one. And that's the reason I think that the Cabinet need to review their decision and look very seriously about whether or not they can justify keeping it closed in 2025.
Kent Online reports.
9 young people have been kicked out of Sittingbourne Town Centre as part of police efforts to crack down on antisocial behaviour. A 48-hour dispersal order was in place over the weekend after residents and businesses raised concerns. We're told the group were verbally abusing and throwing items at people. A group of 9 people have been fined more than £5,000 for litter offences in Medway. They all took place between May and July last year and relate to dropping cigarette butts in public places. Those accused had all failed to pay their fixed penalty notices and also didn't show up to court. The boss of an animal sanctuary near Sittingbourne has been sent a water bill for more than £84,000. Amy James, who runs Happy Pants Ranch in Newington, had been paying around £100 a month since moving to the site in 2021. Water Plus have told us they've put the bill on hold while they investigate. Now, a Medway councillor says he's prepared to call for a referendum over a bid for the towns to be granted city status. Leader Vince Maple announced the authority's fifth push for the title at a meeting last week. But Michael Pearce, who represents Huson Werburg and High Halstow, says it's unfair a decision was made without public consultation.
So the first I heard about this was when the leader of the council, Vince Maple, said in his leader's report last Thursday that I've sent this letter off to bid for city status for Medway. So us councillors weren't consulted at all. And more importantly, the public weren't consulted. It was just the case from the leader of the council that I've sent this letter off and I want city status for Medway. So it was a complete shock to me. And quite scandalous, to be completely honest. And as you know, Wally, the city status issue is a very sensitive subject. And the reason for that is because Rochester, of course, lost its city status. Well, they say they lost it. It was actually cancelled on purpose by the former Labour administration of Rochester upon Medway City Council. And so it was deliberate policy to cancel that status. And as we know, when Medway Council was formed in 1998, a few years after that, they bid for Medway city status. So it came as a complete shock. And whenever this subject comes up, there's always anger and frustration from the public. And it's completely understandable because they never get asked about this. And this identity, this new name for the place is going to be imposed upon them. So they do need to have some input on what they're going to be called, surely.
So, Michael, I was kind of going to get your sense of it. Would you like Medway to be a city or see some form of return of city status to Rochester? Because it was a historic city. Lots of people in the Rochester area in particular feel quite proud of their heritage. But obviously, this is something that Raynham, Gillingham, Chatham has never really had in any real form. Would you like to see city status in some form or the other? Is it more just about kind of the process of getting there than the actual thing itself?
Well, I think firstly, the people have to be asked. Vince Maple said that the only cost of this bid was him pressing send on an email with that one with that letter. But I think that's being disingenuous, because if we did get city status, you're talking about a complete rebranding exercise, new street furniture, new signage. There is a cost to it. That's the first thing. I think the public needs to be consulted. Us councillors need to be consulted. You know, we need to have a debate and a vote on this. The public need to be consulted. But in terms of the city status itself, do I want to see it returned in the form of Rochester? Yes, absolutely. I want Rochester's city status to be returned, absolutely, 100%. But this whole notion of Medway, and there's also been talk of forming a greater Medway with this local government reorganisation when merging with other councils nearby. You know, that absolutely not. But returning Rochester's city status, rightly so, because it's been a city for thousands of years. The name is Rochester. Absolutely, but not this Medway nonsense. And definitely consult people. You have to consult the public. You can't just impose something upon them against their will. Otherwise, they won't accept it. Ultimately, the people will not accept something that they haven't had a say on being put onto them.
Now, Rochester did have city status until 1998, when it was lost during the process for Medway to become a unitary authority. Councillor Vince Maple says he wants to put Medway on the map before devolution means the authority no longer exists.
It's well documented that council has applied a number of times previously. I think we've always supported that bid, always had cross-party support. It was clear on Thursday it had cross-party support from the main opposition groups. That was welcomed. And I think if you look at the exciting times we've got ahead with local government reorganisation, it's quite clear that any future council will take a wider footprint than just simply Medway. And so from that perspective, we probably are coming close to the end of being able to bid for Medway, the 285,000 odd residents that we have here, to be in that particular area. When we get to that larger council, that probably won't be available. The white paper doesn't talk about that explicitly, and of course it's something that for most parts of England they're probably not that worried about. For us in Medway, it's really important. So I did raise it with the minister. She encouraged me to write, and I was very pleased to do so, very pleased as always to share that letter publicly. And so from my perspective, it's about saying a couple of things. Recognising the unique characteristics of us as one Medway, but also what makes up Medway, those five towns, the communities, the peninsula, and the letter indicates that. And actually, people can move from one part of Medway to another, but you're always within Medway. And I think for me, that's part of what this journey is about, to say actually, you can be really proud of Gillingham or Chatham or Rochester or Stroud, Raynham, the peninsula, and you can be proud of Medway too.
If you're, say, just a Mr. Jones from Raynham or Gillingham or any of the Medway towns, and you're sort of, you're not really sure, you don't necessarily support, but you're not against it, you're on the fence, what's your argument to them of what will city status do for them?
Well, we've certainly seen other examples. So Wolverhampton, for example, have said actually when they receive city status, the conversations about inward investment were helped with that. It doesn't mean that you're automatically going to receive inward investment, but being able to have that status to show to those who are looking to invest in a community gives them that confidence that actually you've got that collective approach, which is important. I'd say for individuals, it's about recognising, I think, in part, the journey our community's been on. If you think about the last 40 years, you know, Medway existed as a place long before Medway Council. If you think back to the mid-80s, there was a economic regeneration double A-side single talking about the wonders of Medway. So look, this place has existed for a long time, but I think for a lot of people, actually one of the things that really galvanised Medway was a really difficult set of circumstances, which was 41 years ago, the dockyard closing. That galvanised the community in a way that actually said, look, we're going to be resilient, robust, we're going to stand together. So I think for me, you know, if you sum Medway up, you know, it is a resilient area. It's somewhere that's got grit and determination. You know, often national media will punch down on parts of Medway and we'll stand united and go, actually, you can't say that about our community. So for me, it's all of those things together, recognising our cultural offer, recognising our sporting offer, you know, our heritage, but absolutely our future as well.
Well, you can let us know what you think. Do you think Medway should be made a city, or is it perfectly fine as it is, as individual towns? You can leave a comment on the story today, or you can head to our socials.
Kent Online News.
Part of Canterbury city centre has been cordoned off after tiles fell from a shop front. The area outside Canterbury Pottery near the cathedral has been closed. The cause of the damage is not yet known. Shoppers say plans for a new Starbucks drive-through at Ashford Retail Park would cause traffic chaos. The coffee giant wants to build the 24-hour outlet next to the food warehouse in Sevington, taking the place of 43 parking bays. Regular visitors say they struggle to park and it'll cause unnecessary queues. Follow Kent Online on socials or head to our website today to see what a new seven-storey block of flats in Folkestone could look like. The pictures have been revealed just days after councillors surprisingly rejected an ambitious project to transform the harbour area of the town. The latest application is for an area of land known as Plot C1, which is opposite Marine Crescent. The owner of a luxury swimming pool company has been fined after fly-tipped waste was found on a country lane in Kent. It's after rubbish from a vehicle belonging to Bespoke Swimming Pools Limited was left on Crockenhill Lane in Ainsford last Wednesday. Director Tony Keogh wasn't thought to have been driving, but has been ordered to pay more than £600. Students at a Kent college have turned the first harvest from their orchard into apple juice. Hadlow College planted their 3-hectare orchard near Tunbridge in 2021, and pupils have been training the crop, pruning and checking for pests. The juice will be available at their weekly plant sales and the annual lambing weekend. And finally, Elon Musk has been told to keep his hands off the English Channel after suggesting it should be renamed. The Tesla boss posted on X saying the stretch of water should be called the George Washington Channel instead. Well, it comes just days after his friend President Trump said the Gulf of Mexico should be called the Gulf of America. Reporter Sam Lennon has been finding out what people in Dover have to say about it.
Elon Musk wants to call the English Channel, say, the George Washington Channel. What do you think of that?
I think Elon Musk needs to go away and leave our channel as is. It is an English channel and it should stay English. We're British, that's our English channel, has been for years and years, centuries and centuries, so no. Elon Musk can leave us alone.
I think it's a stupid idea. He's not British, so he needs to stay over in his side and just let us have the English channel that's ours. So yeah, that's it really.
I think it's a ridiculous idea.
I think he needs to, you know, concentrate on America and just leave Britain alone.
Kent Online Sports.
Football first up, and it was another game without a win for Gillingham last night. They had been leading Grimsby Town 1-0 following an own goal from the home side, but the hosts equalised with just seconds to spare. It means the Gills stay 17th in League 2 and have now gone 7 games without a victory. Manager John Coleman admits mistakes were made.
I've been managing a long time and I made a wreck at the end. Made the wrong sub, and that's no disrespect to Johnny Williams. I should have put Max Clark on to 5 at the back. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, but it's not hindsight. I'm experienced enough to know that that was the call, and I made the wrong one. And, you know, I'm man enough to admit it that I made the wrong one. And as I said, that's no slight on Johnny. But we should have just gone 5 at the back and tightened it up. They were going long. They hadn't laid a glove on us in all the second half till the last 5 minutes. They could have scored 3. And so we'd had the warning when Glenn's made a great save. That was about 2 minutes to go, or 3 minutes to go. I've got to make a sub. To be honest, for all my experience, I've made the wrong call. And there's nothing to say that they definitely wouldn't have scored, but we'd have had a better chance because we would have had more people in position. And maybe Shad would have been closer to the goal to maybe cut the cross out rather than, and Max being trying to stop the cross rather than the other way round. With Shad trying to stop the cross, we would have had an extra man in the box. So I've got to take full responsibility for that. And, you know, I thought we played ever so well, particularly in the second half. Conditions very, very difficult. We absolutely dominated the second half. It doubles worked twice. Well, Dave hit it for us once. I don't know how Tim's had to stay out, to be honest. And I can't fault the work rate for the players. You've seen how much they've given and you've seen how much they're hurting. We've got to try and build on, you know, another away game where we haven't got beat. But still got to make more chances. And they were there for the taking tonight in the second half, and we didn't take it.
We also caught up with goalkeeper Glenn Morris after the final whistle.
Obviously, you feel gutted now. You know, it's a game where we feel like we've dominated. Hardly laid a glove on us the whole game, and just the last 5 minutes was a bit manic, and they had a couple of opportunities, and you're just praying to hang on, but it just wasn't to be. But, you know, you can't fault the effort from the boys and the whole squad. It was, we've had a right go, and, you know, on another day, we'd obviously win it. But, we've got to move on. We've got Saturday to come, and it can be a very important point if we go and back it up on Saturday.
The Jewels welcome Notts County to Priestfield on Saturday. And in rugby, Kent's Alex Mitchell's recovered from a knee injury in time to start England's first game in the Six Nations. They travel to take on Ireland in Dublin on Saturday. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget you can follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, TikTok and Blue Sky. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk, and whilst you're on the website, don't forget you can sign up to Kent Online Premium. Now that gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And if you use the promo code Nicola Everett, all one word, at the checkout, you'll get £30 off the price of an annual subscription.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.